This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
I don't want to come too often and make you sick of me. Good shot, man. You're very accurate. How do you have so many pine cones with you?
Boy, we're not subdued this morning.
Are you mad up there or just excited? Can you throw one closer to me? Try to hit me.
I managed to swim to an island at the end of a point. All of a sudden, there was a big man standing beside me.
For many in the region, the presence of Bushmen, or Nakgon as they're known in the Tsleil-Waututh language, is a reality that goes back thousands of years. Legend has it, terrifying human-like creatures have powerful magic.
Excellent. You threw five in a six in a row and landed almost precisely in the same place. About 15 feet in front of me. That's very impressive. Whoa, seven in a row. How are you doing it from where you are? Gosh, how far away must you be? Hey! Holy smokes. Good job, man. Dude, you are excellent. Holy shit.
There's even stories of Nakgon stealing moose and caribou carcasses.
An intriguing discovery is being investigated in a community east of Seattle. Someone came across a lengthy trail of extremely large footprints.
An investigator measures an unusual series of footprints left in the snow in Washington State. Failed attempts are made to replicate the 4 to 6 foot strides required to leave the trail.
Well, you did it. I asked you to. This one just hit me on the head. All right. You proved your point. What an excellent throw you are. Oh, my God. I guess I wouldn't be laughing if these were rocks. All right. Are you playing or are you mad at me?
He took time off work, photographed them, filmed them.
Vindernagel himself is a wildlife biologist who has documented evidence he says is left by the legendary creature. The recordings in Alert Bay match vocalizations in other parts of Canada. And while many dismiss them as dogs, bears, or moose calls, Vindernagel maintains visually analyzing them on computer. Computer discounts those.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
I think I have enough information now to actually say with a reasonable degree of certainty where this Sasquatch hangs out on a regular basis this time of year. This kind of busts the myth that Sasquatch is a nocturnal creature.
This is Strange Harbor.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, ghosts, near-death experience, Sasquatch, UFOs, all strange things. I'm Johnny Manson, and she is MUFON investigator Cherie DeSouce.
Keeping it real with UFOs.
And our guest today, I'm such a big fan, I'm marking out hardcore. I always mark out when Christopher Noel is here, or he's at the conference. He's anywhere in my presence. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Well, I don't know what mark out means, but I'm going to take it as a compliment. Thank you for having me, you guys. It's great to be on your show.
Now, you are a Sasquatch researcher, habituator. How do you want to be labeled?
I just say researcher. I don't know. Some people have problems with that term, but all it means is investigating something. So I don't see what the big deal is.
Right, because some people make everything a big deal, don't they?
That's what the problem is, yes. I'm a researcher. For the last 15 years, I've been looking into this species, and the 8-foot-tall hairy bug bit me very hard in 2005 when I first went on a BFRO expedition. And Matt Moneymaker, whatever you may say of him, was extremely kind to me and was kind of like an evangelical preacher about studying the species, and it completely blew my mind and changed my life, and I've been on this path ever since.
What you're doing out in the field, some might consider habituation. Is that what you call it also?
I think of habituation more as when the two species are at a particular spot, like a house or some Homo sapiens property, and the Sasquatch start to feel more comfortable with the residents there and come around on a regular basis, and the residents start to feel more comfortable with them, and each kind of familiarizes themselves with the habits and boundaries and behavior of the others, so that there's a decrease anxiety and in some cases a decrease in distance, although of course Sasquatch never sits down and has a beer with us. I have a three-step process, and I'm in the middle of making a documentary about the fruits of that process. For the last 3 years, I have first I took the step of finding structures or likely Sasquatch structures, possible Sasquatch structures in forests very nearby town. One forest right next to the house where I grew up, one forest right in the middle of the capital of Vermont, right on the outskirts of the capital of Vermont, Montpelier. And these are microforests in many cases, and you find potential Sasquatch structures in them. And then you have to take step two, which is to leave out audio recorders and record night after night after night of audio, and then sit there and listen to it in real time. For 2018 and 19, I listened to more than 850 hours of audio, and 99% of it is nothing but ordinary forest sounds, but then the thrilling 1% makes it all worth it, where you hear knocks and vocalizations and tree pushes. And after all that time, I was able to persuade myself that these are their structures, and they're kind of like flags planted in a territory, and it once you find those, they're going to circle back to that territory. They kind of are nomadic and on the move, and they will kind of traverse through their different territories in a given area. And so if you listen to the nighttime sounds, you'll hear them periodically come through. And so once I had established that, I knew that these were active forests where Sasquatch tend to operate, even though they're right next to our civilization. And this past year, I've just spent the night there. I've done 39 nights since May, and about a third of the time I have direct interaction where I hear their knocks or their vocals, or they push a tree down next to me, and my goal is to get good footage. I have a night vision scope that I have attached to my cell phone. I have a FLIR thermal camera, because thank goodness, just in the last 18 months or so, FLIR came out with an affordable model where you could also record directly from it for 4 hours of recording time, but with a press of a button. It used to be that thermal cameras were, you know, $5,000 or $6,000, and you had to attach them awkwardly with cables to a video camera that had an in port, and it was just a nightmare. And we kept thinking, boy, if only you could just press a button and record it. And now I can. So in a nutshell, that's where I am now, and I'm making a documentary about it called How to See a Sasquatch. Very straightforward. I feel like our field has kind of been spinning its wheels for a long time, and I've been posting videos for years, and I've liked a lot of them, and people have found them useful, but I want to take my game to the next level.
I really enjoy, and I keep reverting back, I know you have tons of videos out there, but the infamous pine cone video where they're like throwing pine cones at you.
Yeah, that was one of the high points of my research career, where I had found this is the ravine that's right next to where I grew up, where I never knew there was any possibility of Sasquatch, even when I was fascinated by the species back as a teenager. And it wasn't until 40 years later or something, 35 years later, that I circled back and realized, oh my God, they're not just in the Northwest, they're here in my childhood forest. And I filmed one in this ravine. It's called the juvenile Sasquatch footage. And I recorded many, many mornings of drumming behind thick screens of trees, drumming and knocking. And then I also had these various days in September of 2015 when a shower of pine cones came down on me from about 150 feet away. And on two occasions, I saw a pine cone shooting up from behind the screen of trees. So I knew it was being thrown at me. And of course, I looked up and there were no squirrels above me. Lots of people on YouTube say, oh, you idiot, these were squirrels dropping those pine cones.
Right.
In fact, they were not. And so I reveled in the attention I was receiving from this particular Sasquatch. And people say, oh, he was trying to get you out of the area. He's mad. No, he was playing with me. I even said, can you hit me right on the head? And 3 minutes later, he hit me right on the head from 150 feet away.
I wonder why no one really has found any bodies. Do you have any clues? Maybe what they do with their bodies when they pass on?
I don't have any direct clues, but I have a logical take on it, which is we don't find their bodies lying around the same reason they don't find our bodies lying around. We're both in the Homo species, and we're smart, and we take care of our dead. I don't know what they do with them exactly, but they must know that leaving bodies lying around would be detrimental to their continued survival. If some of them die and are not taken care of, it'd be very unlikely that we would stumble across them, because animals in the forest go off to die in a thick place. You know, the cliched response, but it's true, is always that people who study bears can spend their whole career in the field and never find a bear carcass. And there's many more bears probably than there are Sasquatch.
You didn't have or did have feelings when the Sasquatch were showing some kind of aggressive behavior when you were camping out?
Feelings of terror?
Aggressive behavior. pushing over trees and knocking on trees where you were sleeping.
I haven't been sleeping out for a long time. This year I went back to it. I used to do it, and then for a while I just wanted to listen to audio. And now I'm coming full circle back to sleeping out. And sometimes they do push trees down within 80 feet of me. That's happened twice now this season. I was delighted and grateful. I was suffused with gratitude. I said, thank you right away. If they were prone to killing us, you know, there's a lot of camping in Vermont. Campers would be coming up missing all the time. So, and also, I don't think most of them do that. So I was just thrilled. In fact, I said, could you push another tree down for me? And it wasn't immediate, but it was an hour and 16 minutes later. Crack, 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 boom, boom.
Oh, my gosh.
On an entirely still night. And on the recorder, I didn't hear this at the time, but I had a recorder a ways away from where I was sleeping, and it was closer to the tree push. And you can hear, after the tree comes down, there's like 8 seconds of silence, and then you hear tap, tap of wood on wood, like possibly meaning, well, you asked me to do it, and there I did it. Tap, tap, done. Although you don't want to project meaning where you can't be sure what they mean, but I was just so happy, and I talked to it for a long time after that, just telling it my name, telling it I was glad to be here with it. Yeah, you do get scared, but overall, you kind of make peace with the tension that you feel, and remind yourself that this is what you want to be doing. This is what, in a way, you're born to be doing, and your fascination kind of outweighs your fear most of the time.
No, I can understand that. I was reading your research and found it very interesting in presenting gifts to Sasquatch, mm-hmm. and how they borrow said gifts and sometimes bring them back.
Yeah, I haven't ever had too much luck with that myself. The woman you want to look to for this, any of the listeners who don't happen to know about her already, is Snow White Bigfoot. She works out of Ohio. And she, for the last 4 years, has been having a very rich, very nuanced, quote-unquote, conversation with her local group via object. And she has these long diary entry videos on YouTube. She calls them her diary entries. And she has 94 of them, and some are an hour long. So you could really go down a happy rabbit hole with her. And she's just had so many instances of demonstrating their intelligence and the specificity of their arrangement of objects over the years. And they do. They bring her things that she's never seen before, and she accepts them as gifts. They borrow things that she leaves, and she'll see them again, returned 2 months later. She'll put out, like, for instance, she put out a line of little box cars, you know, those model cars that kids like, and then one day she found an extra boxcar matching those boxcars. You know, they have this capacity for associative thinking. They'll put the same colors next to each other, the same types of objects next to each other. They just seem, it's kind of like OCD, that's kind of related to the autism thing, too.
You have a research on autism savant relationship between humans and Sasquatch because of their 10 behaviors that seem to relate to autism. I found that fascinating, but it begs the question, how do they take care of their children?
I don't think their autism is the same as our autism. My theory is that way back when we had a common ancestor, you know, several million years ago, that ancestor had autistic traits, and that the autism we see in people currently is an evolved version of that original primate. And the autism that seems to me to be in evidence in Sasquatch nature and behavior is a differently evolved line of the same sort of cluster of gifts and capacities. So it's autistic savants, too, the ingenious sort of autistic individual that I'm talking about, where they have like a photographic memory, prodigious ability to understand systems and patterns so that they can memorize our species behavior in their local area and make sure to stay out of sight, like a squirrel on the other side of the tree, constantly aware of where we're looking, how we're trying to outsmart them, and they're 3 or 4 steps ahead of us all the time, unless you use my method, my trees, and go sleep in their territory and tamp down the fear and just kind of rise to the thrill of it all.
I was reading through through those 10 steps, and I found the mimicry echolalia to be fascinating. Do you feel that Sasquatch may have some type of paranormal abilities, or, you know, there are some people that think that they weren't born here? What do you think about that?
Well, there are three separate issues in that question. One is the extraterrestrial thing, or whatever you mean by not being born here. And then the first part was echolalia, and that is a trait that is often exhibited in folks with autism, where they repeat what's said to them. And this can be immediate echolalia or delayed echolalia. And there are many cases that I've found and have put in my books where people at habituation sites will hear the human voices mimicked, like a child will hear their mother calling them from the woods, and they go out in the woods and there's no mother there, and they come back to the house and the mom's been there all the time. So Sasquatch like to play with us, and mimicking our voices is one thing that they do. And of course they also are adept at mimicking the sounds of forest creatures. I had one being an owl the other night, but also wood knocking, so it wasn't much of a charade. And so they're very good at mimicking. And so that seems to be one of the areas in which they have affinity with human autistic people. Then you asked about paranormal abilities. And I'm sure from personal experience that they are able to accomplish telepathy. I have a book called Mind Speak that goes all into that and has 20 different testimonials from people who have had long experience with this, with telepathy and Sasquatch. And also goes into the science behind human telepathy to set forth some of the frameworks within which we can think of it in terms of quantum mechanics and such. And so that's in my book, Mind Speak. I think it's fascinating. And I've never been able to do Mind Speak with them myself, but I was with a woman in Texas for a lot of days over the years, and she's able to communicate with a particular female in her local group. And there were several instances that her communication with this female was proven to me beyond the shadow of a doubt. And I go into that, too, in my book. I could tell you today, but you asked a third question, which is, are they not from here? And on that, I'm agnostic. I think, from what I've experienced, they're like an animal, just like we are animals. We share the earth as earthlings, it seems. I just have been listening to audio tape from 2 nights ago when I stayed out with some friends in this very active area. We couldn't hear it at the time, but we had one up the hill from us, which was pretty close to where I luckily put my recorder. And he was making little whistles, tapping on trees, and sometimes vocalizing, like saying, all night long, just kind of keeping tabs on us, babysitting us, make sure we weren't up to no good. And that to me is not the kind of behavior profile of a spirit or an interdimensional being. It's like a cross between a gorilla and a human, which is, in fact, what the genetics have shown in the Ketchum, the Melville Ketchum results, that we were an ancient hybrid between our species and another primate species that still has not been unearthed. But we're unearthing new members of our human family tree every few years.
I'm also reading on quantum mechanics the ability to see things at a distance with your mind.
Remote viewing.
Yes, exactly.
One of the things, the episodes that convinced me that my friend in Texas really was able to communicate with this female Sasquatch was, I asked her, can you ask the Sasquatch, she had a name, but I'm not allowed to tell the name, can you ask her to give me advice for my research back in Vermont? My friend looked out into space and received the message and said, she says, directly east of you, big water. Now, of course, that wouldn't be enough by itself, but there is a large reservoir directly east of me where I had been researching, and I hadn't told my friend in Texas this.
Uh-huh.
And then she continued, not on the side with the dirt bridge, but on the other side. And in fact, this is a reservoir. It has a big dirt dam on one side, and indeed it's the other side where I first started researching after a young man contacted me after seeing a, quote, 7 foot tall, naked, hairy man running through the woods. And it's on that opposite side from the, quote, dirt bridge where I recorded hours and hours of wood knocks, et cetera, found lots of structures. So my friend, my human friend in Texas, had no knowledge of any of this, but it was the message pinpointed. That's a case of remote viewing. She was able to see either through me, having been at this site, or through the local Sasquatch's local here in Vermont to that site. She was able to have knowledge somehow at quite a remove there in Texas of the nature of my research site back up here.
You know, I find that fascinating in your research, how you're tying this all together.
Yeah, and in fact, autistic savants have a higher incidence of psychic ability than neurotypical people.
With their parents or someone close to them, right?
Also with a researcher named Diane Hennessy, this woman who you can look up on YouTube, and she does research with autistic savants, and she finds that, and she has, she's a brain expert. I don't think she's a surgeon. She's a neurologist, and she has explanations for why the makeup of the autistic mind lends itself to being able to perform these super normal feats of perception, and telepathy is chief among them. Listeners who are interested in this connection can look her up. So Sasquatch, if their brains are wired similarly to our autistic savants, then it would make sense in that regard that they're advanced beyond your ordinary Homo sapien brain in order to perform what we would call psychic feats.
There are some people who believe that Sasquatch are able to blend in with the environment using capabilities as like a cuttlefish, where they can...
Cloaking.
Have you found any evidence of that, or have you read or researched that?
I've researched that like every serious student of the Sasquatch species, because that's one of the main abilities that gets reported. I actually have a video about Sasquatch and their ability to apparently disappear. It's called Sasquatch Camouflage / Cloaking, The Role of Hair and Oil, if anyone's interested. So I think it's possible that they can literally disappear. I just would sooner exhaust all more natural explanations first before resorting to that, and portals and such. You know, I'm open to evidence for higher-level metaphysical calisthenics or transcendence. But so far, I think that their ability to play with our minds, also in the category of telepathy that we were just talking about, seems to me to point toward them manipulating our vision, what we think we're perceiving, as being a more likely explanation than that they're literally disappearing into thin air. And also they have lots of oil on their hair, and this can distort light. And M.K. Davis has an excellent video about how Patty seems to disappear at one point when her hair is flooded with sunlight after she comes out from behind a tree.
This sample was collected in the vicinity of a sighting, and it was a tuft of hair containing a lot of hairs, individual hair strands. When you look at it under a microscope, it gets a whole lot weirder.
That's a real good example, and that's contained in the video I just mentioned. So I don't think that what Sasquatch does is related to what octopuses and cuttlefish can do, because cuttlefish, those two species are using their skin, whereas Sasquatch is covered with hair. I don't think that hair is essentially dead, so I don't think it can change like that.
We're talking with Sasquatch researcher Christopher Noel. More coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and our guest today, Christopher Noel, Sasquatch researcher and author. You know, I have a theory. Maybe someone else has come up with this theory, too, and I just stole it or whatever. But maybe you could add credibility to it, or maybe you can debunk it, where you're seeing a Sasquatch, they use that zapping that they supposedly have, that, whether it's infrasound or whatever, to almost stun you momentarily, then walk off, and then it kind of wears off just real quickly to make you think that it just disappeared. Could that be plausible?
Yeah, I think that's great, Johnny. I think that they can instill an experience of missing time in us. I've always thought that it's more likely some electromagnetic capacity they have rather than infrasound, because so many researchers report their electronic equipment being disrupted.
Right.
Which doesn't happen with infrasound, but does happen with EMF, electromagnetic fields and pulses. I think for however they do it, they've evolved an ability to wield electromagnetism. And I think that this can cause all kinds of tricks of vision, back to how we can explain it more naturally, that this apparent invisibility or disappearing. I think that they can make our very eyeballs vibrate, which can certainly play havoc with one's objectivity, and they can I think freeze our perception for a certain period of time, which is how it could be accomplished, that they are there one moment and gone the next, right, rather than stepping into a portal or such.
You're talking about ley lines. Have you seen any correlation between their habitats and ley lines? Ley lines are ripe for what you've just discussed as far as vision issues and electromagnetic field displays, etc.
Yeah, I think they are able to use the ambient electromagnetic energy from the Earth.
Right.
And so this would be enhanced or intensified at ley lines. I often find a lot of structures, and so do other people, near power lines. So I think that they can also make use of human electromagnetic energy. I kind of think of them as being physiological batteries in a way, where they can tap into this energy and then deploy it when they need to. And I don't know how in the heck they manage that.
I have an idea. One of the ways that humans used to ground themselves is we didn't wear shoes. Sasquatch is always grounded, and we don't have that because of wearing shoes all the time. That's one component to having the ability to absorb that energy, and being able to transport it and to use it. Who's the electronic guy that discovered electricity? Who was it?
Tesla.
Yeah. He proved that. You stick a rod in the ground and you have energy for life.
I always thought that grounding was kind of dissipating our electric charge, but maybe I'm wrong.
It can do both.
I don't really have anything particular to add to that. That could be one of their gifts, is to, take up energy and then have it for their use. I think also another thing about the invisibility is if they have a field of electromagnetism around them, they can alter and bend light. So we might be seeing what's behind them rather than the object itself, and that provides the illusion of invisibility. I mean, it is literally invisibility, but it presents the illusion of the actual meaty body going away into someplace else, whereas it doesn't have to be that way.
Sure, I can relate to that. You know, there was one thing about your research that I wanted to ask you about, and that's the little girl who spoke with giants.
Yeah, that's a novel I wrote. It's called The Girl Who Spoke with Giants, and she is an autistic savant, the main character in that book. And so it's filled with thrills and spills. I think it would make a good movie someday, but maybe every author thinks that about his or her. That's another thing. There's no good movies about Sasquatch.
Right.
They either demonized the species way beyond any rational limit, or they make it into a big cuddly kind
comedy.
Of
Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah, exactly.
Harry and the Hendersons. The only one that comes close is, of course, Letters from the Big Man. But I got bogged down in that. I liked it for the first third or half, and then the Sasquatch became more of a token for nature itself as they're battling to stop development of the land in that movie. And so you lose focus on the actuality of our kindred species. I think of Sasquatch as our next of kin here on Earth, much, much closer to us than gorillas or chimpanzees, because according to what we can take as credible, in my opinion, from the Ketchum sequencing from 2012, is that they were originally half-human, I mean half Homo sapien. And so over the millennia since then, they've been reproducing with their own side more, so they're no longer 50-50. But they still, the maternal line still hails from our species.
Interesting.
So female Homo sapiens back in the day were probably not always consensually mated with by some other. And the other side, the primordial male of this hybridization need not have been gigantic like Sasquatch are today. Sometimes two parents can produce a hybrid offspring that is larger and more robust and capable of survival, more fit for survival than either of the parents. For instance, the liger is much larger, like a third again larger than either of the lion or tiger parents.
We've seen how genetics can make monsters or can make something grand into the future. Yeah, that's completely possible. It's just that we can't get a hold of one. We can't seem to have a verbal or even a nonverbal communication of great enough so that we can understand them better. You know, we're getting close, but it just seems like it's taking a long time to get that kind of trust.
Well, their nature directly contravenes that. The only creatures on Earth that I can find that both are drawn to us and avoid us like the plague in the same personality are Sasquatch and certain autistic people who can't cope with direct interaction, direct contact with others in our, you know, other people. But they are often hungry to communicate with us, so they'll do it through objects, through pictures, through working at a keyboard rather than making eye contact. And this is the same way that, for instance, Snow White Bigfoot is able to converse with her local group, never directly, always indirectly. And it's this indirectness, this mediated communication that is one of the hallmarks of our relationship with Sasquatch. And it's going to take a fluke to short-circuit that. Like, one would have to get hit on the highway by a Mack truck, or one of the many hunters that are out there trying to become rich and famous by harvesting a species will have to have a lucky day. And then, you know, on a certain plane, our relationship with the species will move forward because everybody will know that it's real. But that'll just be a sort of a reduced kind of crude plane. It won't really be a relationship between living minds. We're like two sides of the same coin. You know, what we're good at, they're not good at. What they're good at, we certainly can't do.
Sure.
So they're sort of like a yin-yang kind of thing. And so to that extent, it makes sense that we're not able to directly embrace the phenomenon, and we are kind of sentenced to perpetually wondering about it and chewing on the mystery. But some people say, well, the pursuit is what's important, you know, the search is what's important. But for me, no, I want to get farther. I want to get really, really, really good footage. I don't want to capture one. I don't want to kill one. I don't want to do anything but communicate to the world, or be one of many who's communicating to the world the fact they're not just out in the wilderness, far, far from civilization. They operate right beside us. They're like hand in glove right beside us. As I was saying before, you know, they set down their flags in small forests right next to towns and cities and suburbs, and you can, quite possible, to experience them. It just takes getting over the hump of disbelief that most people have, or saying, like, how could, yeah, maybe they exist way out in the boonies and the hinterlands, but surely they're not here. And so they dismiss these structures as all made by Boy Scouts, quote unquote, or made by kids.
How would you tell our audience what they can do to show their respect for them, like leave them apples? Or is there something that the average person can do if they come across these sticks? And what do you suggest?
Well, I suggest finding odd structures in the woods and then leaving an audio recorder for many nights and until you establish to your own satisfaction that they come around. And then, sure, you can leave gifts. That's one approach. That's one step three. I'm taking another step three where I'm trying to experience them in real time. But you can also show them your goodwill by leaving. Apples are good. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are good, but not refined bread. Don't leave sugar. Don't leave anything sugary. I once left a half cherry walnut coffee cake out behind my house in a place where there was a big teepee structure. And the next night, while I'm getting ready for bed, I hear it on a still night. I hear a huge crash of a tree. And then the next morning, I go out to find that the teepee structure has been demolished. And all the interaction ceased after that.
Wow.
So I think that the sugar, it's not what they're used to eating in nature. So I think it probably made them sick, or like the young one that I think is who I was interacting with ate it and got sick, and then the big daddy came in to put the kibosh on the whole game that we were playing back and forth.
Oh, man.
So we're talking fruit and vegetables, not raw foods.
Not coffee cake. One time in the Texas situation, I brought for the big female that my friend was telepathically communicating with, I stopped at Walmart on the way from the airport, and I got a red velvet cake, and I got a cheesecake. I put half of each in one container with a plastic top over it, you know, and put it on this fence post. And the next morning, I went out, and it was all gone, plastic and all. And then my friend started saying, oh, she was experiencing this horrendous headache, and she said, oh, you poisoned me. And then we said, well, did you eat the whole thing all at once? And she said, yes, because she was kind of ostracized from her group at that point, and normally they share everything, but she was just on her own, so she ate the whole darn thing. I said, well, why did you eat the whole thing? She said, it tasted good. That one was like mud, only with no stones in it.
Oh, that would be the cheesecake.
Cheesecake with no pebbles in it. Just, ouch. The worst sugar headache in history.
Oh, no. Yeah, their metabolism has got to be different.
You got to be careful.
I mean, you wouldn't do that to a dog or a cat either, so...
No.
A grandparent might do it to their grandchild.
That happens a lot.
And then take them back home.
Yeah. You know, you've put so many hours of research of, like, credible evidence, credible facts, scientific theories. You've done it without calling people names. You've put in this work that most don't want to do or they're too lazy to do. I mean, because you record hours and hours, and then I made the mistake of thinking, oh, okay, I've been in audio all my life. I'll show these Bigfoot researchers that you don't need to listen to every single thing. You can just spot it. And I found out, no, you actually have to listen to every hour, every minute, every second. And it's not as easy as just spotting it in the audio file.
Yeah, a lot of people told me I could just spot it too. And then when you do the test, you realize lots of things are subtle.
Right.
Even not so subtle things don't always appear. If they're far away, but they're obvious, like a vocal, that's a precious piece of data. You want that. And it's not going to show up on the spectrogram. So, yeah, you have to listen. Luckily, I'm an editor of people's books. So my line of work is good for, I can listen to audio while doing my job. But most people don't have the kind of luxury of being able, you know, to listen for many, many hours a day.
Right. Why do you think it's so divisive in Bigfoot research? Is it our egos? What is it?
It's because of the stakes. This would be one of the handful of greatest discoveries in the history of, in our history, the history of our species. And to find out that we're sharing the Earth with another kindred species who's at the same level as us, just as intelligent in many ways, much more intelligent in some ways, it's going to rival and threaten our sense of being on top of the heap. And so the high stakes, the sort of indescribably high stakes of coming to awareness of this creature are so exciting for each of us individually. And the notion that we could be historically important by bringing this truth out to a wider audience, to the entire human race, is so tantalizing and intoxicating that people get carried away, and the sort of our innate egos get sort of a little bit warped by the high risk, high yield kind of nature of this pursuit, because the risk is that you just spend your life in this obscure fringe and never have any kind of redemption for having taken all this ridicule and judgment and everything. Like people like John Green and Grover Krantz and may he rest in peace, John Bindernagel, who spent their whole careers on this and never got to see one. It's a fraught stew of emotions and aspirations for making history, and that just kind of takes the lowest instincts of some folks and exacerbates them, brings them to the surface.
You know, I can understand that, but as a researcher, as a scientist, it is our obligation to use every tool in our bag, and one of those tools is to set up trail cameras. I mean, you could have a whole damn forest full of cameras that, you know, you can blind them so that they're not seen. And, what do you think about that?
By and large, they don't work at all. People have tried them, thousands and thousands of people have tried them, and they come back and they find them broken. They find them yanked around to the backside of the trees, away from the trail. Or they look at the footage the next day or the pictures, the stills, and they see that the camera has been tripped intentionally. They see a stick waving in front of it to trip the camera. They understand, whether it's through telepathy or some other intuition, they understand what we're trying to do, and we trick them with cameras. And although there have been a handful of times when this has worked, the Olympic Project has been at this for, who knows how many years, and they've never come up with a great picture.
Right.
A few really good. And the Pennsylvania one, the Jacobs pictures, are a real juvenile Sasquatch. So that's tantalizing, too, but it seems, to my way of thinking, it's a waste of energy.
Hmm.
Better to go sleep out there and let them come to you, and there they really are, right over there. You don't have to spend all this money and time with trail cameras. You can actually have an experience with one. It's just that most people are scared to sleep out in the woods, so that's kind of off the table. But if you can get over that fear, you can have experiences with them an alarmingly good percentage of the time. And if you have some cool gadgets like my Maya night vision, you can hope to get footage of them. I'm still trying, and when I finally do, then I'll release this documentary, but not till then, because that footage is the kind of linchpin or the capstone of this whole project.
Sure, that makes absolute sense.
Where can we get copies of your books?
Amazon.
Okay.
Okay.
Heard of it?
Yeah, I have.
I think so.
It's a startup.
That's with an A, right?
Yes, A, right.
Okay, A.
So you have the...
He's writing down A.
Yeah, you're right. The Mind of Sasquatch?
There's one called The Mind of Sasquatch and the Secret to Their Success. There's one called The Sasquatch Savant Theory. There's one... Let's just run through these. There's one called A Field Guide to Sasquatch Structures.
Oh.
There's one called Mind Speak. MindSpeak, which is one word that I mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh.
There's my novel called The Girl Who Spoke with Giants. Another recent one is Next of Kin, Next Door, where I talk about this whole idea of the startling and mind-boggling proximity of the species to our species in physical proximity. And my YouTube channel is Impossible Visits.
Oh, let me write that one down. I'm gonna.
Can we put it up on strangeharbor.net?
Well, I mean, that's only what I want.
Okay.
In public.
Are there any researchers that you follow? I mean, I know everybody on YouTube is a professional Sasquatch researcher, even though there's no such thing, but they do claim it, and you know, everything in the woods is a Sasquatch. Are there any researchers that you find credible enough that you are interested enough to say, I want to see what these guys have been doing, or this person?
There are many that are credible, but as I was mentioning, spinning our wheels before, there's a certain kind of stagnation. Like a lot of people find structures that are real, and so to that extent, that they're credible. But I've a little bit lost interest after 10,000 structures.
Stop. Boy, are you jaded.
Yeah. 9,000, I was still hot on the trail, but... So I like researchers who are striking out, forging new new pathways, and that's why I keep mentioning Snow White Bigfoot. Look for her at on YouTube. And I'm going to forget. There's a lot of good ones. Bigfoot Odyssey does great work. Bigfoot Tony is really good at analyzing video footage. So, and of course, MK Davis is the best of all time at bringing forth the obvious authenticity of the Patterson film.
Right.
If anybody's on the fence about the Patterson film or curious, I have a video called The Patterson Film, Everything You Need to Know to Be 100% Convinced.
What about Thinker Thunker? What do you think of Thinker Thunker?
He's uneven, isn't he? He has a lot of great ones. His video, 23 Degrees Between Bigfoot and You, is one of the best I've ever seen.
Here we have two bipeds strolling along, doing what they do. Both have a similar gait, seemingly. However, there is one small difference. First, let's take a look at Patty here from the Patterson-Gimlin film. The angle of her shin rise is 73 degrees. We see it on every step. Now let's take a look at our model on the right. We see her shin rise only comes up to 52 degrees. So now we have 21 degrees difference. Big deal. No two shins are going to rise the same, right? 52 degrees, 52 degrees, again. And again, everybody hit the same mark, 52 degrees, which means there's something very weird about the mechanics of their walk.
So is breaking the Bigfoot code.
And here's the man who claims he was the one wearing that very female monkey suit. We'll call him Bob. And while I wouldn't call Bob a liar, his own body ratios are about two, so stick around. This might just be a game changer. Now, I'm not willing to say Patty here is a Bigfoot, but I am willing to say she's a non-human. Ratio-wise, you, me, all of us humans have at least one thing in common. Our legs are longer than our arms. What about Patty Bob here? Because now, even if her arm-to-leg ratio is different by even a little, that whole man-in-a-monkey-suit theory, that thing's going to start to crumble. And after measuring Patty, I found that her ratios, they're not off by just a little. They're out of the ballpark off.
He has lots of good ones, and then he has some that are less firmly grounded, I would say. It's a range. He has some of the very best of all time.
Would you come back to the Sasquatch Summit when we decide to fire that back up after this pandemic?
Absolutely not. That thing was a show.
I love it.
No, of course, I would love to. It's super fun, very, very well run, and just a Herculean effort on your part to bring it off. And I would love to, especially after my documentary comes out, if it ever does.
Right.
So, you know, I'll let you know when I get that footage, and then we're off and running, and I'd be honored once again to come out there to the left coast after this pandemic is over.
Right. You'll be a guest on Strange Harbor again when you can?
I think I've given you it's like Trump on that 60 Minutes interview.
Yeah, I think I've given you enough.
We have enough.
Oh, my gosh.
No, it feels like we've just scratched the surface. So,
right.
So, yeah, I'd be delighted anytime.
So, if you would like to learn more about Christopher Noel and his work, or the latest UFO sightings, if you want to contact us, yell at us for being tinfoil hat-wearing whack jobs, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, Ghosts, UFOs, Aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.